welcome you to the Ethics Luncheon again this week. I think we got off to a good start last week with Dr. Leonard and his sidekick who introduced him. It was a good experience, I think, for us, and I think we have a good program lined up for today. But before that, we have a couple of announcements. One is what's going to happen next week. We're going to have a film on how do we live in a hungry world. And it's a good film, about 20 minutes, and then we'll have some discussion. I hope people will come for that because it'll be a good time to think about things like this in our hungry world. There's also, someone's not here to say it.
Ron Sider will be here March 27th, 28th, and 29th. And there's some posters up around on the bulletin board that announce the workshop. The application forms are on the bulletin board in the post office, and there'll be some in your mailbox either this week or next week.
Yes, coming up pretty soon, about 4 weeks, so something to look forward to. And give as much time as we can to our speaker. We're going to let Dr. Sheridan introduce him today.
Well, I think you've heard the introductions or the introduction on yesterday, and you really don't need to be introduced to him again. Let me tell you that at 2 o'clock, Dr. Taylor will be in Dr. McSwain's class on church and community. I suppose we can invite a small group like this to participate if you would like to. And then in the morning again in chapel, and then some class presentations tomorrow, and then Friday morning in chapel. So we hope you'll take advantage of all of those opportunities that you have to hear him. I've asked Dr. Taylor to speak about 15 minutes, and then to give us an opportunity for some questions and dialogue with him. And I think, among other things, he'll come and make some comments about the posture of the black church today, what has happened to it in the last few years, among other things. So we just let him have the floor. Dr. Taylor.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Dr. Sheridan, my friends, you go right on and eat. I'm a preacher. I'm accustomed to people sleeping while I talk, so I don't mind if they eat, too. It's all right. I understand this is an informal ethics gathering at a, well, I guess maybe I ought to say something about the situation of the church, that portion of the Christian community which I know best, the church, black church. We are in somewhat of an anomalous situation at the moment, I think. During the days of the late 50s and the 60s, there was no question about where the great majority of black churches stood. We were confronting the long-standing structures of segregation in this country, and almost all, certainly the overwhelming majority, of black congregations were committed to that purpose. Once the civil rights enactments, the laws, were passed, and at least superficially a different climate came upon the country, this intensity of purpose was diffused and disintegrated. I'm not sure anybody knows today where exactly the black church is in relationship to the whole American scene. I have the feeling that there is a large attempt, a growing attempt, to find within our own community some of the healing possibilities in terms of housing, in terms of hospitalization, in terms of credit unions, and in terms certainly of trying to marshal our voting strength. Now, it so happens that for 30 years now, I have known the city of New York better than any portion of the country, and people all around the country tell me constantly that New York is not typical. So I'm always a little reluctant to speak about what is true, because what I know best is perhaps not representative of much of the country. All of our great cities, and certainly New York is, all of our great cities are facing a time of dislocation and of transition, much of it a problem of money. And that problem is occasioned partly, not wholly, but partly by the fact that the people who are most able to support the expenses of managing city government have moved out of the cities, and the people least able, minorities, blacks, Puerto Ricans, other new immigrants, least able to support the cost of running the city, have come into the cities. In our great cities, and I think this is true of almost every one of them across the face of the country, north and south, one of the largest problems which not only the black church, but all so-called, quote, responsible portions of the black community face, is the problem of a huge, unrelated, sometimes alien, and sometimes suspicious, often suspicious, portion of our black populations in our cities, who are increasingly separated from all of the communal institutions. I would guess anybody who has any concern at all about black life in the cities of America today is deeply concerned about that that growing underclass of people who are not related, whose aspirations are not the same or do not seem to be the same as the people in our churches and the other people who move in our institutions. Frankly, I do not know the answer to that. I was alluding in some poor and indirect way, I'm sure, this morning to some other problems which affect the black community, and which they affect all of our communities, and I'd like to go on to them for a moment. I have had admissions officers in our New England universities, more than one, to say to me that we have come upon now, they have seeing now, the most private generations of students that they have ever seen, that our whole student population, much of it now, has turned away from any external purpose whatsoever and have turned deeply inward. Now, I think the black community shares that problem. What has happened in this country has been a hardening of resistance to change, number one, but a facade of change which makes the confronting of that hardening even more difficult. Also, this has affected all of us, black and white alike. The loss of faith in our institutions goes deeper than many of us are aware, and of which many of us are aware, and surely deeper than most of us are willing to admit. As I read and talk with people and travel around the country, I discover on the part of all people, black and white, a deep uncertainty, an uncertainty so deep that people have turned away, so many of them, from even consideration of matters that involve our public institutions. It has been a growing and alarming statistic that fewer and fewer people are participating in the entire electoral process. And this is certainly true in the black community. Many of us felt that with the passing of the civil rights legislation, and particularly the voting acts, that enormous numbers of black people would rush to the rolls, to rush to the registration places, to register to vote. There was an upsurge, but it was nothing like the potential. My complaint in the black community has been that we are, that lacking great financial strength, though there is more than we are aware sometimes and more than we use wisely, but lacking enormous financial affluence, particularly in our cities, our great strength is in our numbers. And sometimes those, that strength has been decisive, as in presidential elections, and sometimes where elections are close in state and city elections. That, and because of that strength, and because that's the one sole source of power which we have available to us, that that ought to be used with a great passion, a great determination. And I don't think it is being done. Some years ago, my own congregation invested $10,000 in, and this was a number of years ago, into a, in a registration campaign to do something about our immediate neighborhood. It was one of the most spectacular failures which I can remember. But this is a problem, I think, which affects all of our people. Now, I don't think the black church has come face to face with the alarming statistic of unemployment among black people in this country. Like almost other, all other people, blacks who are employed tend not to worry about, as they should, about blacks who are not employed. The labor statistics were released 2 or 3 weeks ago. And where unemployment for white males in this country was at 4%, for black males it is at 7.8. 37% of the employable black teenagers, young people, teenagers in their early 20s, are unemployed. Now, this is an alarming statistic. It reflects itself in a lot of things, in crime. It reflects itself in a contracting out of the society, and in an increasing attitude to look upon the whole society as an enemy symbol. I believe that, I need not go into that here, but I believe that black churches themselves have enormous resources to do far more than we have done to meet a lot of these problems. I'm not one of those who feel that, I hear this said particularly by black preachers, that the people are in the churches. I do not believe that black people are in the black churches. There are some of our churches that are supposed to be huge churches and attract people, but proportionately, if you take my own community, there are maybe 400,000 black people in the Bedford-Stuyvesant community of Brooklyn. I'm sure there are more. I would think that on any Sunday morning, for instance, if that is used as an index, that there would not be in all of the churches, of all ilks, shades, denominations, persuasions, whatever you want to call it, sects, cults, storefronts, churches, cathedrals, anything you want to name, there would not be 50,000 people in all of those churches put together. Now, with a population of 400,000 people, I think it is idle talk to talk about black people being in the churches. I do think, though, as has been abundantly established again and again in history, that comparatively few people can make radical, can have radical influence, can have major influence, and can effect radical change on a society. I think the whole Christian movement is an indication of that, and the Marxist movement is an indication of that, that it does not take a majority of people to effect change. But I think that does have to be pointed, that must be pointed out. I would then say that the primary situation, the situation generally of the black church in America is a point of uncertainty as to exactly what is to be its role at this point in the movement of the society, and a sense of frustration, I do not think that's too strong a term, about that huge, and I am sure growing, segment of people who have no relationship to any church, who have no interest, who apparently have no interest, and who have no relationship to any of the other communal institutions. I think these are our major situations. Now, I perhaps have not touched upon any of the things that concern you, and if I've done so, I'm sure it's been in a very cloudy and uncertain way. But I'm told that we are to talk about whatever you want to talk about together, and so I'm quite willing now, if you want to enter upon that, for us to do so. I've been told to repeat each question, so I'm going to do it. I had said that there is a facade of change in the country, and you asked would I enlarge upon that facade of change. All right. I am told by educators in the South that while the South has moved in a remarkable way, and as I said last night to some people, in some ways, to be quite honest, in a more forthright way than northern communities have moved in terms of integrating schools and integrating facilities was not a problem by and large in northern areas, but particularly in the integration of schools. Blacks in the South complain to me that there are subtle ways by which their children are still set apart, even in schools that are apparently integrated. I do know that black teachers have suffered greatly in some states in terms of their employment when integration has come, because these two school systems obviously were carrying a heavier load, an almost insuperable burden, and in the poorest sections of the country where two systems were attempted to be maintained when one all along would have sufficed. So there has been apparently an excess of teachers, and blacks have suffered. The fact that unemployment has moved, the employment picture has changed so slowly, I think is indication that the attitudes in this country have not changed that much. Now, I would not want to be too, gloomy about this. I know that there has been substantial change in the country, but the attitudes of people reflected in what I have mentioned, reflected in employment, seem to say, and more than that, but seem to say, that the changes have not been nearly as deep, have been more cosmetic than they appear at first glance. I think there is something else to be said. Hopefully we are almost out of that period. There was a time of alienation as between our black and white communities, a time of confrontation, and a time of strong antagonism. This meant that blacks withdrew more and more into themselves, and in a sense, and whites, of course, were already to themselves. Now, I hope that we are on the way out of that. I think I see signs, ever so slight, that that moment is passing. I think it had to come, because the claim that we had good race relations in this country, wherever the claim was made, was a claim based upon a not quite valid premise, I think. And in order for things to get better, they had to get worse. And hopefully we are on our way. But I speak now primarily of the attitudes of people. Maybe I'll let that stand a moment. Yes, sir.
Bill Brock of the Republican Party has been campaigning very vigorously for the last several years in his attempt to entice the black voters to support the Republican Party. Would you assess the success of their attempt to draw the traditional Democratic voting bloc from the Democrats to the Republican Party?
Mm-hmm. Well, this indeed has been true. Mr. Brock's a Tennessean, isn't he? Is he? Yeah, Tennessean. Ben Hooks of NAACP and Jesse Jackson of PUSH have both spoken before the Republican National Committee, as I recall. And this is a healthy thing. Any minority community suffers when it is considered a safe community. The Democratic Party, beginning with Franklin Roosevelt, wooed and won and offered to black people some glimmer of hope, and so most black people became Democrat. I've been part of Democratic political operation in the city of New York for these years, much more active once than I am now, but at any rate, many of us did. But I think a true two-party system is the most beneficial thing, and surely, to minorities. Now, the Republican Party has a problem of its own. It has the Goldwater legacy. It has the problem of Mr. Reagan. It has the problem of that whole far right segment. So one has to ask, will the real Republican Party stand up? Now, the Democratic Party traditionally had this problem as between the South and the great industrial centers of the North. But that problem has been, I think, far more happily resolved in the Democratic Party than it has yet in the Republican Party. But hopefully it will be in that party as it has been in the Democratic Party. Because alliances in politics are constantly shifting alliances. As special interests assert themselves and the counter-assertions are made, and this is what the American political system is all about. And frankly, I find no fault with the idea of the thrust and counter-thrust of the whole American assumption in politics. I hope it does well. I hope the wooing of blacks by the Republican Party will have a strong effect. Mm-hmm. The question, and I forgot to do this just before, but the question is, what are the churches to do in relating to these people who have no interest, who feel completely alienated from them? I think first is to people in our churches, leaders, lay people, all in our churches need to look at the things that are hurting people who are alienated. Why are they alienated now? And I'm not sure you can start by preaching to people. We have, in my own congregation, brought on, as one of the ministers of the church, young Reverend Johnny Skinner, who is brother of a man who's been very prominent in black evangelism, Tom Skinner. And he has begun to go at our whole evangelism thrust, not from the pulpit, but from the street. Rather than from the pulpit toward the street, from the street, if it leads toward the church, or wherever it goes. And I think also that we have to take what I consider to be a true Christian attitude in believing that people must be helped in the name of Jesus Christ, not in order to get them to do anything as far, and not with their ulterior purpose, but that they just must be and helped, that they must be identified with, that we must sit where they sit, and we must enter into, as far as humans can, into others, their circumstance and their situation, and work from the inside out. Now, what the result will be, I think we have to leave to the Spirit of God, to the Holy Spirit. But that we must do it, that we must identify, I think, is our first responsibility. This is not easy. This is not easy. For there is a resentment, and this is true in the black community, there's a resentment on both sides. There's a resentment on the part of those who have moved fairly well against those who have not. There's resentment on the part of those who have not, who are not making it, even to the extent others are making it, toward those who seem to be. There is this tension there. It is a knotty problem. And it does not lend itself to easy solution, but I think in Christian faith, we must set ourselves to it. I'm being asked to talk about some things we are trying to do at 2 o'clock, and I don't want to prefigure too much that, but some of our churches are trying in this way and that to do this. How is the role of women being worked out in the black church? It varies from congregation to congregation. We do not have, and I'm speaking now of Baptists, really. We do not have as, I don't know how to say this, as formal an opinion about things as you perhaps have. That word formal is poorly chosen, but I don't know what to say. We do not have an attitude about things, and I don't think you do, but I think perhaps you have more of an attitude about this or that as a denomination than we do. In other words, we are indeed, and this is not all to our credit, we are an army of generals and all of equal rank. And there is, so that a church, one church will take one attitude toward women as, are you talking about women as preachers or the women's lib movement altogether? Both. Mm-hmm. I thought, I caught him swallowing, I thought I better ask that. As far as the women's lib movement is concerned, the whole movement, blacks are naturally sympathetic with this, except that many blacks have begun to see that the problem of black women is not in some areas the same problem of white women. Black women traditionally have had to to be all too much in the fore of responsibility. And I say to our young black women that what they need to be brought in and coddled and put on pedestals. More of this needs to be done. So that the responsibility, being granted responsibility or the right, I don't like that word granted either, but having responsibility, the right to responsibility recognized is not, I think, one of the primary problems of black women. There has been, as far as women ministers are concerned, there has been a long and deep tradition of antagonism toward this. Some of our churches have come to the feeling that this is not a right, this is not a proper, it is not a Christian, it is not a tolerable attitude. And while in our own case we have not yet ordained a woman, we are quite prepared now to do so, given proper training and so forth and so on. And some churches have begun to bring women on as a part of the staff, the ministers, but not very many. Yes, sir.
I'd like to move to another liberation movement and ask, what is the attitude of the black community toward the gay liberation movement? While some leaders have come out very much, we don't want to have anything to do with it. Others have said, yes, we identify with the struggle.
It's never been particularly an issue in the black community. It has been widely said that due to a lot of things, family structure being primary one of them, being a primary one, we have had maybe a disproportionate homosexual population, given our population in the society. But there has never been any formal attitude about homosexuality. I'll tell you an example, though. In my own congressional district this year, the man who has been congressman, happens to be white, had an unfortunate thing to occur in Washington. And finally, the court allowed him to take therapy. Homosexual matter. He was returned to office. There was a black candidate. The congressional district is, I guess, 60-40 black. Some blacks did not vote for him, partly, I guess, because of the homosexuality, but I think even more largely on the basis of race that a black person was running. But he was returned to office, and with a substantial number of black votes. If that's a clue, then there you are. But I don't think it has ever been a serious issue among black people.
I was interested in Dr. McCall's comments yesterday when he introduced you. Is there a credit union that your church runs?
Yes. Like yes. Is there a credit union at the Concord Church? Yes. It is about 21 or 22 years old. It is a federal credit union under the Federal Credit Act. It does not do as well as it ought. It has, I guess today, 800, 900 members, but it ought to have far more. It has reached assets now of $600,000. It is administered completely by the lay people, some of whom are business people and whatnot, and it goes along. It was begun because in minority communities, small loans are more difficult than for others, and sometimes rates of interest are higher. And so in order to meet that problem, that credit union was begun. I was saying a moment ago that I think black churches themselves can do a very great deal toward healing some of the hurts that are abroad. And this is one small way to do it. But this is something available to all churches. And if a great number of them would do this, and more are, it would mean that much relief of pressure from on people. Yes, sir.
Dr. Taylor, your convention is the result of the citizen
right.
organization. Mm-hmm. And of course, our convention is too. If you could wave your magic wand and affect any relationship within your power between your convention and Black Baptist Union and Southern Baptist in particular, what would you want to accomplish to see the Black church that are Baptist and the White Baptist church move? Which direction would you want to see us move in terms of cooperation, cooperative ministry, cooperative evangelism, or?
Question is, what direction would I think our Black churches, conventions, et cetera, ought to, what direction which they ought to move in relationship to White Southern Baptist Convention in particular, other conventions? As a bit of background, my convention is a schism which grows out really of the civil rights struggle, largely, partly out of internal matters of tenure and whatnot, but I think in a larger way from the civil rights struggle, in which many people felt that our denomination ought to be committed in an open and forthright way to Martin King and to the civil rights movement. We have, not altogether through our own instigation either, we have had now one joint session with what is called the National Baptist Convention of America, or the Unincorporated Convention. It occurred at Atlantic City 2 years ago. Our relationship with it is closer than our relationship to the National Baptist Convention USA, and it is, I suppose, true partly because it was the National Convention USA in which the schism occurred. There are cooperative ministries now. We carry on with some with Southern Baptists in home missions, and in a larger way with American Baptists. We have just come almost out of the Fund of Renewal, which was really begun. It was conceived by Tom Kilgore, one of our own pastors in Los Angeles, last president of Progressive Baptist. And it was a $7-8 million program about ministries in our cities and other places for Blacks and Hispanics and Mexican people. I saw something in your Home Mission magazine last week or two in which Emmanuel McCall was commenting about the closeness of relationship between Progressive Baptists and cooperative ministries and Southern Baptists. What would I like to see now? Well, I frankly conceive of the day when there will be but one convention in this country, and hopefully it will be the Baptist Convention of the United States of America, so that it'll get away from all of these designations of political difference and internal political difference and external political difference of philosophy as far as Blacks are concerned, get rid of the differences of region and the, I think 100 years as far as this matter of race is concerned is enough to affect, 100 years are enough to have given to something which rooted in race at its inception. And it's going to come. It's going to come. It's going to come. There's no reason for it not to, really.
Apart from the denominational level, what future do you see for integrating local churches? Mm-hmm.
I think that churches have to be open in their spirit toward people of whatever race. Now, I think there are deep sociological reasons here that have to be confronted. There are differences in patterns of worship. There are differences in the associations in the society. Now, You say, well, the church ought not be beholden to these things, and I agree, it ought not be beholden to these things, but these things do affect the church's life. And you will discover, I know it must be true in your own churches, that there will be some churches in which certain Southern Baptists will feel more at home than other churches, Southern Baptist churches, in which these say Southern Baptists may not feel as much at home. Churches have personalities, character, and but I think there ought to be in all of our churches an openness for people who feel in terms of what that church's personality is. And I don't think any church has the right to have an unchristian personality. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about those nuances of attitude and outlook about worship and about things like that. I do not think that this is going to be the most rapid kind of development. Yes, sir, I'll come there.
As one outside of the sphere of our influence, how do you, or will you give us a character sketch of ourselves when we come to your neighborhood of New York or Northwest Ohio or Michigan and tell you as a pastor that we've come to do pioneer mission work? I can tell you that.
I knew some such question like that would pop up before this day had gone, you know. The question is, what do I think of specifically of Southern Baptists moving or others moving into so-called alien territories and instituting what they call mission work? It poses problems. It poses problems in northern cities, not so much for black people, but for white Baptists. And my church is a member of the American Baptist Convention also. We're duly aligned and have been in the American Baptist Convention for 100 years, I guess. It has posed problems in Canada. Canadian people speak quietly with pain of this. And yet, if Southern Baptist people are moving in, I don't want to cop out on this, but I think there is a shading which must be given to it. If Southern Baptist people are moving into whatever area, be it Atlanta or Seattle or wherever, to help Christianize the community, that's one thing. If it moves in to make Southern Baptists out of people who live in those communities, that's another thing. And I think it's a matter of your problem within yourselves, of your own outlook upon what your mission is. Now, I grant that that is not an open and shut answer, but that's not an open and shut question. It has that about it. Yes, sir.
You've skirted the issue of economics a number of times. What ought the church, black, white, whatever, do with regard to the issues of housing and unemployment and inadequate care for oppressed people?
I think that our churches must seek, if they have their own resources, to do it themselves. If they do not, and if there are public opportunities, I mean through the provisions of government to provide housing, I think we need to be cooperating, need to be at it. Now, I know the old problem of the of separation of church and state. And you have faced this in your colleges in the South in a painful way sometimes. But you faced it going forward, I notice, in most of the colleges. I heard that story, which all of you will have heard, but it was a choice thing to me about the Southern Baptist college president saying that they said that the government money was tainted. He said it taint enough. There are problems about this. Government regulations are so irksome and irritating. We operate a nursing home, 120-bed nursing home, $3 million a year budget. 170 employees, and it's a headache, there's no question. And one has to keep, I'd say to the members of the board, who really carry the load, that they and we, all of us, have to keep going in there, seeing the service, in order not to get fed up with what it takes to carry it on with these government directives and constantly changing requirements and surveys and on and on and on endlessly. But I think that the responsibility is too large, the need is too great for us to boggle at the problems that are involved. Now, of course, you know, this thing about the separation of church and state is not a simple thing. Churches, I have not known any churches that have a few churches that have volunteered to pay tax as any other enterprise would do, and to accept tax exemption is a form of government subsidy. It's a negative subsidy. There would be those people of honor and of greater honor than my own and who will differ with that. But I think churches and government are already involved with each other, have always been. Yes, sir.
Would you give an evaluation of Tom Skinner and his ministry?
Would I give an evaluation of Tom Skinner? I said that Johnny, his brother, is with us. I do not know Tom Skinner's work well. I knew his father. I have met him only once or twice. And I just am not in a position to make a judgment. I just am not. Yes, sir.
You mentioned a certain amount of optimism about the potential conversion of different Baptist conferences and denominations, that sort of thing. Which white Baptist denomination is really leading the line of cooperative ministries? Is it being the American or Southern?
I don't know. Historically, it would be American Baptist. Because many of us, I myself, went to a little Baptist college, no longer existing, which was begun generally under the auspices of American Baptist Home Mission Society shortly after slavery. And this is true all through this country. There's not one in Kentucky today, but all around, Shaw in North Carolina, Bishop in Texas, Morehouse in Georgia, and on and on. There are these schools which were really fostered, supported largely by American Baptist Home Mission Society. There have been a number of churches which have been a part of the American Baptist Convention for many years. There is this long association. There has been in the last 10, 15 years, maybe longer, a conscious and a growing and a deepening commitment on the part of Southern Baptists to relate to black conventions and to black churches, all to the good. And even in the day when there was the greatest, and I can't use any less word, enmity between us as black Baptists and you as Southern Baptists, and that enmity was there, we just as well face it. Some of it is still there. There were people among you in all of those days who kept some small corridors open between us. And I would want to call the name of somebody like Guy Bellamy, whom I knew in my earlier years. And then there was a man in Louisiana. Oh, my goodness, his name will come to me in a moment, who did yeoman work in this whole area.
Pastor?
He was a part of the Home Missions work, Mission Board work, I guess. But this was his mission, and this is what he did. It'll come to me. At any rate, there have been these people who have done this.
I think we'd better call it quits. Dr. Taylor, we appreciate again.
Well, it's
so
a pleasure.
You're being here.
All right, sir. Thank you.